two catastrophes bookended the first decade of the 21st century. The Twin Towers fell in 2001, and global markets collapsed in 2008. What connects these seemingly unrelated events? Both revealed the same uncomfortable truth. Our dominant economic and political system, despite its claims of invincibility, contains fatal contradictions. More striking still, the response to both crises followed an identical script: suspend the very values we claim to defend in order to save them. After 9/11, democratic freedoms were curtailed to protect democracy. After 2008, trillions in public money rescued the private financial system that had just proven its recklessness. History didn't just repeat itself. It became a dark comedy where the punchline was always the same: the system survives while its victims pay the price. This isn't a story about communism's failure, as the title might suggest. It's about capitalism's remarkable ability to survive its own self-destruction. When the Berlin Wall fell, we were told history had ended. Liberal democracy and free markets had won forever. That dream lasted barely 20 years before new walls appeared: gated communities for the wealthy, militarized borders against migrants, and invisible barriers between the financial elite and everyone else. The question isn't whether capitalism works, but for whom it works and at what cost to the rest of us. Think about the last time someone told you that's just how the world works when discussing economic policy. That phrase, innocent as it sounds, contains capitalism's most powerful trick. Unlike previous systems that openly declared their values, capitalism presents itself as simply describing reality rather than imposing an ideology. When Alan Greenspan admitted after the 2008 crash that he'd found a flaw in the model, he revealed something profound. What he thought was objective economic science was actually a belief system all along. This anti-ideological stance is pure ideology. Markets aren't natural forces like gravity. They're human constructions maintained by laws, police, and political choices. Yet interfering with market logic gets dismissed as naive idealism, while letting markets run free is praised as hard-headed pragmatism. Notice the pattern. When you can't afford healthcare, it's personal responsibility. When banks can't cover their bets, it's a systemic crisis requiring immediate public rescue. The most dangerous sleight of hand transforms systemic problems into individual moral failings. Bernie Madoff's Ponzi scheme sparked outrage at one man's greed, conveniently ignoring that his fraud differed from legitimate finance mainly in being too obvious. The entire financial system operates similarly, moving money through complex instruments, generating profits from circulation rather than production, requiring constant expansion. Madoff became the scapegoat, letting us believe the problem was one bad apple rather than the orchard itself. Consider how we remember Martin Luther King Jr., reduced to the sanitized "I Have a Dream" speech while forgetting his radical campaigns against poverty and militarism. We celebrate the king who challenged Southern racism, but erase the king who challenged American capitalism. This selective memory reveals how dominant ideology absorbs radical challenges by celebrating their least threatening aspects while burying their revolutionary implications. Crises rarely produce change. They reinforce existing power. Germany's 1930s collapse produced Hitler, not socialism, offering scapegoats instead of systemic analysis. When normal life disrupts, people retreat to familiar ideologies. Nationalism surges, minorities get blamed, and strong leadership drowns out structural reform. Naomi Klein's shock doctrine revealed how disasters enable radical policies that would normally face resistance. Iraq's shock and awe traumatized citizens into accepting free market transformation. Hurricane Katrina's chaos converted New Orleans public schools to charter schools while residents remained displaced. The 2008 crisis exposed selective urgency. Banks received trillions overnight. No debate, no moral hazard concerns. When GM faced bankruptcy, policymakers broke union power through rejected collective bargaining agreements. Workers could wait, capital could not. Crisis response follows ideology, not necessity. blame gets redirected from capitalism itself towards secondary targets, lax regulations, corrupt individuals, irresponsible borrowers. Today's power humanizes itself through calculated vulnerability. Superhero blockbusters dwell on Iron Man's PTSD, making commercial products feel artistic. North Korean propaganda claimed Kim Jong-il shot 19 in Gulf, one strategic imperfection creating authenticity. Israel's military emphasizes soldiers' doubts and traumas, neutralizing their actions through sentimental empathy. Berlusconi perfected this, combining technocratic efficiency with buffoonish persona while ruthlessly wielding power beneath the clownish mask. Few dare imagine alternatives to capitalism, while former communist regimes embrace authoritarian capitalism with Asian values. This hegemony sustains itself through capitalism's utopian promise, unlimited growth and universal prosperity, masking itself as pragmatic realism. Yet the 2008 meltdown exposed capitalism's irrational priorities. Billions materialized instantly for banks, while social security, healthcare, and environmental concerns could wait. Four fundamental contradictions prevent capitalism's indefinite reproduction: ecological catastrophe, the inappropriateness of private property for intellectual property, socio-ethical implications of techno-scientific developments, and new forms of apartheid. The first three constitute the commons, our shared social substance being systematically privatized. Cultural commons include language and shared knowledge, publicly funded research locked behind corporate paywalls, pharmaceutical companies patenting genes evolved over millennia. External nature commons encompass forests, atmosphere, and water resources threatened by exploitation. The climate crisis represents what economist Nicholas Stern called the greatest market failure in human history. Internal nature commons involve our biogenetic inheritance, now subject to corporate patents claiming ownership over life itself. This systematic enclosure justifies resuscitating communist thought. We face the triple threat of losing our symbolic substance through privatization of knowledge, our genetic base through biotechnological manipulation, and our livable environment through ecological devastation. This universal threat demands renewed vision, based not on state control, but on protecting and expanding the commons, what belongs to all of us and should remain beyond private appropriation. Socialism and communism aren't synonymous or sequential stages. While commons enclosure dispossesses through privatization, restoration under authoritarian regimes doesn't guarantee liberation. Socialism offers organic community with underlying hierarchies. Communism represents something radical, the overcoming of property through commons. After socialism failed, capitalism is bankrupt, the answer is communism. Socialism addresses capitalism's contradictions, ecological catastrophe, intellectual property, biogenetics, without questioning who controls collective resources. Capitalism's survival strategy involves reinventing socialism through communitarianism, populism, or Asian values capitalism, like China's state-controlled market economy combining authoritarian politics with capitalist economics. Michael Hart clarifies, "Capitalism means private property, socialism means state property, communism means radically overcoming property through commons. Socialism is vulgar communism, property's abstract negation within property's field, or universalized private property." The 2009 crisis demonstrated this when America adopted European social democracy through massive state interventions, preserving capitalism, not replacing it. The Haitian Revolution exemplifies a sublime communist moment where colonized peoples took revolutionary principles more literally than colonizers intended. When ex-slaves sang the Marseillaise, they asserted, "We are more French than you. We stand for your revolutionary ideology's innermost consequences that you couldn't assume." This illuminates genuine communism, not state control, but radical fulfillment of emancipatory principles that existing systems proclaim yet systematically betray. Contemporary capitalism has transformed the domains targeted by 1960s protests: factories, school, and family. While the left won cultural battles around personal freedoms, they lost the economic war as market logic invaded spheres previously controlled by the state. Exploitation increasingly takes the form of rent rather than traditional profit, what Zizek calls the becoming rent of profit. This shift explains strengthening direct authority in modern societies. Today's capitalism presents a peculiar hybrid: personal libertarianism in social spheres with increasingly authoritarian state interventions in economic matters. Bill Gates exemplifies this transformation. His wealth derives not from industrial exploitation, but from appropriating rent through privatizing collective intellectual achievements. Microsoft's dominance comes from controlling software architecture that has become essential infrastructure, a digital toll booth collecting fees from every transaction. The historical link between capitalism and democracy has been compromised with the rise of authoritarian capitalism, notably Singapore's model, which became a template for China's transformation. China and Vietnam demonstrate that capitalist dynamism can coexist with authoritarian control, challenging assumptions that free markets inevitably lead to free societies. Parliamentary democracy contains a fundamental limitation. It effectively passivates citizens while maintaining the appearance of participation. As Walter Lippmann argued, modern democracy functions through a specialized class of experts governing the bewildered herd of citizens. We continue playing the democratic game, acting as if we're free, while unconsciously accepting invisible injunctions about what to think and how to behave. We face a choice between authoritarian capitalism and genuine emancipation. Perhaps the solution is apocalyptism without final judgment, simply stopping history's train before catastrophe rather than launching grand new movements. A proper political act today interrupts the predominant movement rather than accelerates it. We must abandon the notion that history works for us. Today's historical thrust leads to catastrophe. Only our free decision to act against historical necessity can prevent it. This gives contemporary movements unique freedom. Though facing overwhelming odds, their liberation from history's supposed laws sustains their creative experimentation. The time for liberal democratic moral blackmail is over. After 2008's financial meltdown, we must recognize capitalism's malfunctions aren't accidental disturbances, but structural necessities. Recurring boom-bust cycles, growing inequality, and environmental degradation reveal deep systemic flaws. We're rapidly approaching global scarcity of oil, water, and food. Without radical solutions, we face global apartheid, abundant regions militarizing borders against chaotic outsides, marked by mass starvation and social collapse. Water, energy, environment, culture, education, and healthcare cannot be mere commodities. The profit motive consistently fails to distribute these essentials equitably. When facing financial blackmail from banks threatening collapse, we must resist populist temptations for symbolic protest. Instead, transform unfocused fury into determined questioning of fundamental structures. Those believing in radical alternatives aren't dangerous utopians. They're the only ones truly awake. The real utopia isn't imagining a world beyond capitalism. It's believing capitalism can continue indefinitely without destroying ecological and social foundations. We need courage to imagine something genuinely new, a world where what we share matters more than what divides us, where collective flourishing replaces individual accumulation. That future won't arrive through historical inevitability, only through our deliberate choice to create it together.